Good afternoon. When General Douglas MacArthur addressed the joint chambers of the Massachusetts legislature a month or so ago, he began by saying, "Men still point to this section of the country as the cradle of our freedom, where patriots arose militantly to protest the tyranny of burdensome taxation and colonial rule. Here, men etched the patriotic pattern which all races who harbored in their hearts a love for freedom have since sought to emulate." An example of what General MacArthur was talking about can be found in the history of the Story family, who risked their lives, their homes, everything they held dear for freedom. Let me tell you about them. Amos Story was about 40 when he decided to do something about the burdensome taxes the Britishers were piling on. His wife, Anne, was equally patriotic, and the children were Solomon, aged 15, his brothers Samuel and Ephraim, and the two little girls named Hannah and Susan. The Stories lived in Salisbury, Connecticut, but in 1774, Amos and Solomon walked to Vermont and built a log cabin on Otter Creek, and they were about ready to go back to Connecticut to get the rest of the family when Mr. Story was killed by a falling tree, leaving 15-year-old Solomon all alone in that howling wilderness. It took that plucky kid more than a month to get back to Salisbury with the sad news. But Anne Story never let her children see her in tears. She said almost casually, "It was God's will. And as soon as Solomon has rested, we will pack up and go to the cabin in Vermont which your father built for us. We will carry on as he would want us to do." Now, it was a great sacrifice for Anne Story to sell off most of her possessions, so she could buy a pack horse to transport the necessary things to the cabin at Otter Creek. She kept her best blankets, her spinning wheel, the big iron kettle and spider, and of course a couple of muskets. And when all these had been loaded onto the old nag, the Stories bade farewell to civilization and entered the forest. Naturally, they could travel only as fast as the littlest one could walk, and they were weeks on the way. But there was no whining about being hungry or scared, and no complaining about wet feet or mosquito bites, because those youngsters had been trained early to accept hardships, and each had his own responsibilities. Instead of babying her children, Anne Story taught them to melt lead for the bullet molds, to load and fire the family musket. They could cook simple dishes. The girls knew how to weave sturdy homespun cloth from sheep's wool, while the boys were almost as handy with tools as their father had been. Each night as they made camp, Anne Story cautioned her children, "Don't ever let the fire go out." And they all had to take turns staying awake to tend the fire. She said, "If you see or hear anything suspicious, don't ever shout. Just reach over and touch me or your brother Solomon." She kept her musket within reach, and under her pillow of spruce boughs, the hunting knife was always handy. It was late October when Solomon Story led the little expedition out of the tangled underbrush to their new home. And with a sense of satisfaction, he saw that the wheat, planted when the oak leaves were as big as a mouse's ear, had grown tall and golden. Opening the cabin door, he said with pride, "Look at the fireplace, Mother. If Samuel will fetch the kettle, I'll get some water. Then I'll start a fire, and we can have supper." But his mother said, "First, we will all get down on our knees and thank the good Lord for our safe arrival." And as mother and children knelt and prayed, Anne Story felt that her husband, Amos, knew they were carrying on and was pleased. Now, it must have been pretty tough for that little family up there in the wilderness the first winter, with snow 6 to 8 feet deep, temperature down to 30 below, wild winter winds moaning in the pine trees, and wolves howling night after night. But Solomon put on his snowshoes and went 10 miles to the Smalley cabin to bring back the guns and salt he'd left there. And he brought back a few extra tools so they could build rustic chairs and tables and benches. And with the first warm days of spring, they tapped the maple trees. And as the frost went out of the ground, they spaded and planted the garden. Ephraim came running in one day to say that he'd seen a bear. So Anne rushed out and shot the critter, thus giving them fresh meat, much-needed bear's grease, and a fine fur rug for the floor. And quite often they had trout and other fish. Then one day a group of Green Mountain boys arrived with a sizable canoe, a gift from Ethan Allen, and they also brought disturbing news. The Green Mountain boys told Anne's story. The British have enlisted the Redskins to make war on all the white settlers in this section. And we warn you, Mrs. Story, you are in grave danger. We're leaving the canoe so you can escape if the Red Devils do make an attack. Ann Story stuck out her chin and said, I know some of the others have quit the valley, but we are staying. Please thank Ethan Allen for his kindness and tell him I'd be proud to have him use this cabin as headquarters. My children will be able to act as his scouts. And then Mrs. Story made the statement, which has come down to us through the history books. If war comes, she said, give me a place among you and see if Ann Story deserts her post of duty. And thus the little log cabin on the bank of Otter Creek became a rendezvous for rangers, runners, and patriots like Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys. As the weeks went by, Ann trained her children to act as sentinels. And as there were five of them, the four corners were always guarded, with one scout left over to sound the alarm. It came sooner than Ann expected. Susan burst through the door one day, wild-eyed and panting. Indians, Mother! Lots of them! They've set fire to the empty cabin across the creek, and I think they're heading this way. Quickly, Ann Story stepped to the door and gave the loon call. And in a few minutes, her youngsters came in, scared, of course, but fully prepared to do the things they'd been trained to do. Dishes were dumped in a cloth and carried to a hollow tree. Food, guns, and blankets were stowed in the canoe, as planned. Then they shoved off, Solomon in the bow, with Ann in back, paddling for their dear lives. How smart that woman had been to find a hiding place for just such an emergency. Hauling the canoe out of sight, she left the children, and climbing an outcropping of rock, she breathlessly watched as the drunken Redskins ransacked her home. When they tossed blazing brands through the windows, it was all she could do not to fire her musket, and her heart sank as thick clouds of smoke poured from the door and the open windows. In a few minutes, to a wild chorus of war whoops and yells, flames licked up the side and crackled across the roof, and the cabin, which Amos Story had built with such care, was soon reduced to a pile of smoldering logs. Wearily, Ann Story crept back to the canoe. None of them had any appetite that night, nor did they sleep, but in the morning, the Indians were gone, and Ann Story returned to begin life all over again. While the children were clearing away the blackened logs and ash-covered stones, she and Solomon chopped down trees, not as big as the original ones, to be sure, but stout enough to make a shelter until a more substantial cabin could be erected. In spite of her isolation, Ann Story became famous, and news of her courage and fortitude was carried by friend and foe alike up and down the river. Now occasional visitors called, among them Ethan Allen, who warned, "You haven't seen the last of this, so always be on your guard. I'm going to give you a list of the nearest Green Mountain Boys, and if you see strangers acting suspiciously, let us know at once." Ethan Allen hadn't been gone a week when a canoe arrived with kegs of powder, extra muskets and flint points. Then other canoes slipped in under the cover of darkness, for by this time, the cabin of Ann Story had become an important link in the underground cause of freedom. Because her conduct could be called treasonable, Ann Story looked for a suitable hideout, and under the high bank of Otter Creek, she found just the place. Prisoners digging out a jail often have difficulty disposing of the dirt, but the Stories simply dropped it in the water. And with all of them working night after night, they soon scooped out a sizable chamber with a sloping roof of strong tree roots. And here, Ann Story stored the food, guns, and ammunition that had been sent in secret by Ethan Allen. The entrance to this underground hiding place was completely covered and camouflaged with low-hanging branches, and many an eagle-eyed Indian and British spy paddled right past, never dreaming what lay hidden behind that curtain of leaves. Every night after dark, Ann took the children in the canoe, and making sure that no one was around to observe, with one stroke of her paddle, she'd send the canoe through the leafy screen to disappear completely under the riverbank. They were careful never to break a branch or leave footprints on the shore. The cave was cold most nights, but Ann Story never permitted a fire, and thus they spent their nights, while the enemy, singly and in small groups, infiltrated the forest on their way to Canada. One afternoon in mid-August, the youngest girl dashed in, all excited. "Mother, there's a white woman lying on the trail, and she's moaning something awful." Was this a trick to lure the Stories to be tomahawked? Ann grabbed her musket and scalping knife and climbed to the high rock, and looking down, she saw it was no trick. the young woman who lay upon the ground was indeed in need of help. Carrying her to the cabin, they learned she'd been captured by Indians a week before. Her husband had been killed, and because she was too ill to keep up with the party, the Indians had left her behind to die. That night, with Anne's story as midwife, she gave birth to a baby boy, a lusty little tyke whose howls Mrs. Story feared could be heard a mile. This was a real problem. It didn't matter much if the baby cried during the daytime, but what if he cried at night and gave away their secret hiding place? And that's just what did happen a few weeks later. As I said, the Britishers were anxious to find and wipe out every supply depot of the Green Mountain Boys, and the Story cabin had long been under suspicion. And on this particular night, a party of local Tories with Indian guides were paddling up Otter Creek, close to the entrance of the cave, when Ezekiel Jennings raised his hand and said, "Shh, what's that? Sounds like a baby crying." The Indian guide leaned toward the water and listened. "No, just little Lucifer. No baby round here." Then they heard it again, and Jennings muttered, "That ain't no catamount a-yelping, nor a bird. That's a baby. You men go on ahead. I'm going to stay and see what happens." He pulled in through the leaves, made his canoe fast, and stepped ashore. Cocking his gun, he sat down on a stump to wait. When Anne Story emerged the next morning, she found the muzzle of Jennings' musket aimed at her breast. "So," he snarled, "this is your hiding place. What else have you got in that cave besides a crying brat? Guns and powder, perhaps, for Ethan Allen? Step aside, Anne Story, and no funny business, or I'll drill you." Looking the Tory straight in the eye, Anne Story said, "You can shoot if you choose, but the sound of your musket will bring the Green Mountain Boys. They are right here behind me, hunting for the Britishers who bribed the Indians to bash in the head of that woman's husband and leave her to die. A fine way to treat your countrymen." Then Anne cocked her head and listened. And with enthusiasm that she didn't feel, she smiled and told a big fib. "Ha," she said, "I hear them coming now." And Jennings, well, he lowered his gun, jumped into his canoe, and was through the leafy screen, paddling for all he was worth. And Anne Story paddled as fast as she could, too, for the cabin. And tearing the flyleaf from her Bible, it being the only piece of paper she had, she reported the incident and sent her youngest son to deliver it to the Green Mountain Boys. Now, I realize this doesn't sound like much of an incident today, but actually it was one of many turning points in the American Revolution. For Ethan Allen's men, led by Daniel Foote and Samuel Bentley, scoured the woods till they found the party of enemy agents and took them prisoners. And when they were tried over at Fort Ticonderoga, it was found they were British spies bent on the destruction of every white man's cabin so enemy forces might sweep unchecked from Canada into the valleys of Vermont and New York. The next time you're up in the Green Mountains, why not look up some of the monuments of Vermont's courageous pioneers? You will find, for instance, on a stone in Salisbury, these words: "Anne Story, in grateful memory of her services in the struggles of the Green Mountain Boys for independence."